Part 27, Chapter 3. Lord Schleim was not the least bit rattled. He knew exactly what he was doing. He was now applying a maxim of diplomacy, which stated that, when diplomacy failed, one resorted to military means. It had become obvious to him in these last few minutes that if he continued along the previous course, he would lose. So he had shifted his entire planning suddenly and irrevocably. These were very troubled times. He felt the power of the small gray man had crumbled, and that things were not what they used to be. Therefore, any threat of retaliation from the small gray man could be ignored. This was the first emissary meeting in over a year, and he was completely certain that the power of the emissaries and collective governments had become a shadow that was no real danger to Tolnep. These empires and states were too far away. He had just given half-captain, now Captain Snowl, just today, very specific orders. He had used a word code known only to officers of flag rank and executives high in the Tolnep government. Using one set of words, one could convey quite another meaning. Additionally, the radio band used was hyper-non-directional, known only to the Tolneps, and could not be picked up on any other radio except those used by flag officers and the diplomatic service, a band which was constantly running on the bridge of every Tolnep major war vessel. And if that weren't safe enough, the transmissions were also scrambled. Schleim had just ordered Roger Dieter Snowl to send the ships of other combatants to the terrestrial points being defended by the Earthlings, to gather up all Tolnep forces, and to proceed with all speed to the conference location. He had told Snowl to totally disregard any and all conference warnings of the small gray man, since the bulk of the Tolnep vessels were at Singapore, a little over 4,500 miles away, quite close, really. They would arrive over this spot in about 2 hours. Schleim had, in the bottom of his scepter, on the opposite end from the radio, a paralysis beam. All he had to do was give the end of it a twist, and every person or creature within hearing would become instantly paralyzed, except himself. A tap on his own ears first would close his deaf flaps. This entire conference was at his mercy. All he had to do was get them all outside, in the bowl, on some pretext, so that any and all guards were also within hearing distance, listen for the first signs of the arrival of his fleet, tap his own ears, and twist the bottom of the scepter. Tolnep diplomats were chosen for bravery as well as wits. He would pick up a gun and shoot his way to the switches of the armor cable, if necessary, turn it off, and let his fleet marines in. As to this teleportation console, he really couldn't care less. Tolnep would be better off if it were destroyed. A nation that based its economy on slavery was always under some kind of threat, and this teleportation had interfered with Tolnep far more than it had helped. He himself was within flying distance of home. The other combatants were also, and would have to bow to his commands or be killed. As for the rest of these emissaries, how they got home, if ever, was no concern of his. And dead emissaries and a dead litter of terrestrial personnel told no tales, especially when buried. He would, of course, go through the motions of torturing this devil and try to get the teleportation design out of him. If the devil died in the process, it did not matter. But the cream of the jest was that if anything went wrong, he would use the devil's own arguments to defend himself. He would claim that Roger Dieter Snowl had turned pirate, that he had acted contrary to orders, and that his approach to this conference was an outlaw act. He knew he could depose and execute Snowl and still command the Tolnep crews. Snowl would simply be sacrificed for the greater good of the state, a common expedient in such diplomatic circles. Schleim could even mop up the other belligerents, using the Tolnep fleet if it came to that. It was very neat planning. The only thing he had to solve now was how to get this entire conference out into the bowl. He was now feeling so confident, he was hardly even listening to this devil as he resumed his actions. Whatever the devil did would be useless, without avail, tolerantly, Lord Schleem sat back and lent half an ear to the continuing proceedings. Diplomacy was, indeed, quite an art. But if it failed, there was always force. He fingered the bottom end of his scepter. He tuned the rest of his hearing in to catch the first rumbles of his fleet in the sky. Part 27, Chapter 4. There had been a delay while a technician changed the cartridges in the atmosphere projector. The emissaries, seeing that Johnny was again about to speak, settled down.
My lords, I do appreciate your indulgence in permitting me to clean up the remaining bits of this odious Tolnep matter. Indeed, I am impressed by your patience. I assure you, we may soon be able to proceed with the legitimate concerns of such an authoritative group.
The influence of the polite instruction discs of the Chinkos was coming in very handy now. These lords, except for the combatants, were definitely on his side. Johnny stood tall in the mine's spotlight. His buttons flashed. The dragon on the helmet seemed to move as he turned his head to Lord Schleem.
Tolnep,
said Johnny, with disdain and contempt in the word.
I have some views that were taken while the conference was verifying credentials. I am going to ask you to identify certain things for me.
Schleem sat back easily, quite composed now.
Go ahead, devil,
he said, almost airily. Johnny looked at him closely. What had caused this sudden calm? Was it just an exhibition of diplomatic super-control? Schleem was, after all, a clever and well-trained diplomat. With a deft touch of switch buttons, the mine spotlight went off, and a new view appeared, filling all the empty space in the room to Johnny's left. It was a remarkable shot. The emissary sat up and peered, very interested. There, just as though seen from the port of a spaceship, bright and clear, projected in three dimensions upon the empty air, was the whole system where the Tolnep planet rode in the ninth ring. The huge combination sun, a double star with a small companion circling the larger orb, shed its double-shadowed light upon the vast system of planets and their moons. The name of the system was Batafor in the cyclo-coordination books, Sirius, or the Dog Star, in the ancient Man constellation charts.
Is this Batafor?
Johnny asked Lord Schleem. The Tolnep laughed.
If you took the shot, you know what it is. Why ask me?
Johnny searched out the Hoven in the second row with his wand as a pointer.
Perhaps the regal emissary of the Hovens might care to assist us. Is this the Batafor system?
The Hoven had been regretting his involvement in all this for some time. His nation was a traditional enemy of the Tolneps and had suffered much in times past from their slave raids. He had begun to suspect that there were penalties and reparations coming up sometime soon. This spirit of Earth seemed to have been taking pains to exclude the other combatants, and he had seen a possibility of escaping censure if it all went wrong here, as it definitely seemed to be doing. Best curry some favor. He could see no danger in it. He rose and came forward, and Johnny handed him his wand with the pointer beam turned on. The Hoven waved the beam generally across the system.
I recognize it at test. This is indeed the Batafor system. That is the old cyclo name. We locally call the double sun Twino, which stands for mother and child in the Hoven tongue.
He tapped the planet ring nearest the sun.
This is Jubo, uninhabited due to its extreme heat and gravity pulls.
He pointed rapidly to the second, third, fourth, and fifth rings.
These have names but are not important. Uninhabited, for they are subject to earthquakes and volcanic upheavals.
He tapped the sixth ring, the planet almost hidden behind the double sun.
This is Torfhat, a cyclo-mining planet. It had a population once, but they were annihilated.
The Hovin looked inquiringly at the Hockner.
My lord, do you mind if I go on?
The Hockner shrugged, then gave a strained laugh.
As you have already as much as said so, my dear colleague, you may tell them it is a possession of Hockner.
Very good,
continued the Hovin.
This seventh planet is Holoban, part of the Hockner Confederacy. The eighth planet is Belor, one of our own Hovin planets.
He lowered the beam and looked at Lord Schleem. But Lord Schleem simply shrugged and said,
You make a very fine astronomy lecturer, Lord of the Hovins. You have omitted some of the fauna and flora, but go ahead.
The Hovin put the pointer on the ninth ring.
And this, I can attest, is Tolnep.
He peered more closely.
Yes, these specks about it are the five moons, though one is hidden from this angle. Tolnep is remarkable for its moons, in a system where planets seldom have more than one. The reflective quality of these moons is a bit remarkable due to their composition. The double sun can give out the normal light spectrum, but on reflection from these moons, the light shifts upward in the spectrum. The Tolnep civilization prefers to work by moonlight and normally sleeps in the direct sun. It is said they are not indigenous
to... Oh, spare us, spare us,
said Lord Schleem.
You'll be telling us about Tolnep egg mating next. Keep it clean, Hovin.
Some of the uninvolved emissaries laughed. Schleem was wriggling his way back into their good graces.
The tenth planet,
the Hovin went on,
is a cyclo-mining planet, Ton. The population existed once, but had actually been removed by the Tolneps before cyclo-occupation. The 11th...
Thank you very much, Lord of the Hovins,
said Johnny.
You've been very helpful.
The Hovin stepped down and would have gone back to his seat, but Johnny checked him. Johnny hit another button. A clear view of the city magically appeared in the air. It was just as though one were suspended in space, well above it.
That is Kreeth,
said the Hovin.
The Tolnep capital. Very distinctive. See how the streets wind their way and entwine.
He came back up and took the pointer.
This is the House of Plunder, their legislative center. See how its sections wind around and come back together. Unmistakably Tolnep in its architecture. This is Grath, their famous combined public park and slave auction center. This rock hill with the holes in it...
Thank you,
said Johnny.
And now this is what I really want you for.
He pushed a button, and the picture changed. It swooped down at the park and gave the emissaries the feeling they were free-falling in space. The park stayed still, but all the surroundings swooped sideways and away, making it look for a moment like a bowl. The camera had steadied. The view now showed just the park. One could see the long slave auction blocks, the comfortable seats and boxes for the buyers. But what was remarkable was the huge clock face laid out in the hill at the edge.
The clock.
Ah, yes, the clock.
The Hovin sighed and glanced at Lord Schleem, but his lordship was sitting there, a smile on his mouth below his glasses, fingering his scepter.
The clock is built of slave bones. It is said huge masses of them have been inset into wheels that turn and show through the windows. It is said that 58,000 female slaves were killed to make up the border, you see.
I meant the time and date,
said Johnny.
They are in Tolnep script, and I suppose you read it.
Ah,
said the Hoven, glad to be off the hook. He was afraid Lord Schleem might rip into him.
The hour, the date. Why, yes, I do know the Tolnep number system. This was taken about 2 hours ago.
He glanced at his own watch.
About 1 hour and 51 minutes ago, to be exact. Remarkable. Was it taken with the teleportation rig out there just today?
He stared at it.
Must have been.
I do thank you,
said Johnny. He took the pointer from the Hoven Lord, who then stepped down, casting a somewhat fearful look at Schleem. Johnny hit another button. Into view flashed the Tolnep planet and its 5 moons. It was remarkably detailed.
Lord Schleem, is this the Tolnep planet and its moons?
Schleem laughed.
It wouldn't do me any good to say no, would it? Yes, devil. It doesn't take an astronomy professor like our friend the Hoven here to detect that that is Tolnep and its 5 moons.
He laughed, easily.
Very good. Then, as a native of Tolnep and someone undoubtedly fond of its moons, could you tell me which moon you like best?
This sudden dive sideways made Schleem wary. He was only giving it half his attention. There would be a while before the fleet could arrive, he supposed, but they might send a scout racing ahead. He glanced at his watch. He fingered the bottom of the scepter. He was preoccupied with how to get these emissaries outside, so both they and the guards could be all taken in at one twist of the scepter bottom.
Well, I'm afraid I have better things to do at home than stand around gazing at moons.
Which one do you like the least?
Persisted Johnny.
Oh, any of them,
said Schleem easily. Johnny smiled. The dragon on the helmet flashed and seemed to move as he turned to the emissaries.
As Lord Schleem has no preference,
said Johnny, reaching out with the pointer beam.
We will choose this one, a Sart.
And he tapped it with the light.
Notice the peculiar crater patterns, these 5 ellipses, that make this moon distinctive.
A sudden chill hit Schleem. A Sart. Covered under its surface were the huge shops and hangars of the entire Tolnep Navy. To this place, local freighters took the parts of space vessels, and on a Sart, they were reassembled. The mighty non-atmosphere ships of Tolnep could not even take off from a planetary surface. Before every material or crew delivery, all the heavens were combed for hostile surveillance. Before every war vessel launch, surface-fired spy ships rose from Tolnep itself and scanned the skies. The function of a Sart was a hard-kept secret. How had this devil come upon such data? Or was it a lucky choice? Schleem felt a crawling unease. And then, abruptly, any worry he had was dispelled. The devil with the strange beast on his helmet said,
Could I ask all your lordships to come outside? Seats have been placed for your ease, and there will be what I think you will find an interesting demonstration.
He had just unwittingly solved Schleem's problem.